This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.
Well, I'll tell you what Netflix told me.
Okay.
They said we got a lot of honkies, a lot of straight whitey, but if you're selling out like 2,000 seats or more, we'll have you, because that means they can guarantee views. So be a minority, get in a wheelchair, be fat, have something, or get famous and then go and become a stand-up. You know, go get a huge YouTube numbers and then send them your special. They'll buy it.
Hot Breath. Ahoy there, Hot Breath-averse. Welcome back to the Hot Breath Podcast, your show where you learn comedy from the pros. I am comedian Joel Byers, and you know what time it is. Hot Breath. That is right, Hot Brethren and Sisterin. We are back, and we have one of our favorite guests back in the Hot Breath-averse. He's done the show a few times, but we've recently, with the current quarantine, which I hope you're all being safe out there, we've been doing this live Q&A series called Comedians on Skype Talking Comedy. We're in our Facebook group, which if you're not a member, go into the show notes, click join the Facebook group so you can start getting in on these Q&As we've been doing with comics like Nate Bargatze. We just had Beth Stelling and Ted Alexandro and Emmy Blotnick. Just so many different comics are coming on the show to answer your questions, and Mark is one of them, and he just released his special, Out to Lunch. It's on YouTube now, but we got to interview him before the release to share his experience with that, why Netflix denied him, and so much more. So I'm excited for you to get into this today. Thank you so much for listening. Just share this with other comics if you find this episode helpful, and we'll see you in the outro with some more exciting news. So now, there is only one thing left to do. And that is inhale a hot breath.
Hello, everyone.
With
Welcome
Mark
to what we call Hot Breath
Norman.
Live. Maybe.
Don't mind me.
Mark.
Do a quick rub and tuck.
This is perfect. This is how we're going to go viral. This is our big break, people. It's Mark.
All right. I'm sorry.
Oh, your gal must be so
up.
Proud.
Oh, yeah. Tiny penis.
No, come on.
Nah.
I've listened to Tuesdays with Stories. I know the deal.
Medium.
So, people in the comments, that is a great icebreaker. So, you don't have to ask that question anymore. Don't ask Mark how big his penis is. He just told us. So, go ahead and start commenting with with your questions, and we're going to get this going. But I have to ask you first. Mark, you've told a lot of cool stories about your work with Seinfeld in terms of like the behind the scenes stuff, but you know, Hot Breath is like a comedy education show, and I'd be wondering what you learned from more of like the craft side or how he operated that you've kind of applied to what you do now.
Good question there, Fatty. I would say he's such a workhorse. He's almost a perfectionist to a fault, where it's, it takes him a while to make new material because he's such a nut about the meticulous wording and the choices and the order and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, it's almost a flaw, but it's also what makes his material so great. So what I learned was he had this great thing about writing, because nobody likes to write. It's a pain in the ass. It sucks. But he said, if you turn the music off, turn the TV off, put the phone away, and just stare at an idea you think is funny, your brain will get so miserable that it'll have to crack the code on it. Does that make sense?
Huh.
You know, like, if you're stuck in a room, you'll find something to do because your brain doesn't want to be bored. So if you stare at a joke for long enough, like the premise, and then you have that feeling of like, all right, this sucks, I want to go do something else. If you hang in there, your brain will get so bored, it'll make it happen. It'll make it work.
So you'll just, like, physically sit there and stare at it, like, written on the page type deal?
Totally, yeah. And every fiber in your being says, pull out, jerk off, watch TV, go gay. But you stick with it and your brain will come up with something.
Fascinating.
And if you look at his material, you can see that he did that. He's got this joke about golf. I don't want to give away his material.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, golf, I don't understand golf. You know why guys go golf? Because they need to be alone. That's what golf stands for. Go out, leave family. It's a funny joke, but you can tell he came up with that joke from just staring at the fucking golf, that word, G-O-L-F, mm-hmm. and that's how he got there.
Very cool. So that you'll do that now.
I try. I mean, I'm not as disciplined as him because, you know, I got all these toys. I got a moped. I got a lady naked next to me, you know, so it's hard, but... He's a 65-year-old Jew, and he's willing to do it.
Yeah, this actually can go into the first question from Charlie Harper. You brought up Jews. Mark, what's your favorite Jewish?
Well, I mean, I got to go to the source. I got to go Groucho. It's Groucho Larry David. There's some neck and neck, great neck and neck with those two. So I guess I go Larry David because he's alive, but the all-timer... is a big old Julius Marx Groucho.
Yeah, that's you have him as your Twitter header photo too with the gals.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's just so funny. He was the first guy to do it that way and just joke after joke, and he's Woody Allen and Bill Cosby's idol, which changes over the years. But that's pretty good.
Yeah, for sure.
He's the quickest guy.
So
here's a couple two quick Groucho lines.
Yeah.
One, he's directing a movie. Some guy's directing. His name's Andy Wood. And they go, hey, will you – because Groucho kept cutting up. And he goes, look, I can't make actors out of clay. And he goes, well, apparently you can't make directors out of wood. Pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Second, he was at a restaurant in L.A. And a priest comes up to him and goes, Mr. Groucho, I don't want to bother you. He's eating a bowl of soup. And he goes, I don't want to bother you, but I just want to thank you for putting so much joy into the world. And Groucho looks up and goes, I just want to thank you for taking so much out. Come on. Quick.
Comedy.
Quick. Comedy indeed.
This question, Dylan O'Neill, who's actually a Toronto comedian by way of Ireland. So he wonders, how much of the greats have you studied and how do you break their sets down?
Ooh, well, studied is a tough question. I mean, I've watched everything. Watched all of Carlin, watched all of Pryor, you name it. But I don't know about study. That's a good question. I guess, watching count as studying?
Yeah, I think that's what he means by study, is like you're watching, but when you're watching a comedian, how are you analyzing them? What are you looking for?
Well, there's a lot of – you ever hear a line and it gets a huge laugh and you go, why did that get a laugh?
Mm-hmm.
Or even you say a line on stage and go, why did that click? That wasn't what I intended to laugh, but that got a laugh. So I think with stuff like that, you got to just sit there and just break it down. And that's kind of why comedy is magical, because sometimes you just can't figure it out.
So you're like – you hear a laugh and you're always wondering, why? What did they do? Is it what they said or is it how they said it type deal?
Yeah, yeah, because usually you go, oh, that got a laugh because it was a misdirect, or it was a pun, or you thought he was going to say this, he said that, but sometimes it's just a funny thing in a funny rhythm, and it just tickles that taint.
Well, how are you able to evoke laugh in your own certain style? Because Dylan actually had a little follow-up detail of, I'd love to know his process, because his jokes are so quick and sharp and easy to follow, and the punchlines are gold.
Wow, well... If I'm being honest, I have zero faith in the audience. I assume audiences are all incredibly unfunny and incredibly dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And I spell out every joke, because there's nothing worse than having a great idea and then them not getting it. So you got to make them understand it, you know? So I say it over and over a million times, and I just keep trying to simplify, and take out everything you don't need. And shorten it up, because I also have no faith in people's attention span.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just years of hammering it through like a funny filter or a simple filter.
Is there a TV on or sound?
Uh-oh.
Is your gal in there watching?
Oh yeah.
Oh okay.
Yeah.
Well, don't worry about it. I don't want to. I don't want to block you for later. She's gonna be like, "You did that silly podcast, and they told me to." Actually, I don't know if that's how she sounds or not. I only know from your Instagram video of the coronalingus. I believe it was.
Wow. Yeah, you nailed it. True story.
Well, when you're talking about like editing your joke and the audience not understanding it, when you say a joke one way and then you're like, they're not understanding it, how are you then editing it down? What are the things you're manipulating to make them understand it in the future?
Keep it simple. I always think about McDonald's.
Okay.
You know, what would McDonald's do? You know, this has got to be, this has got to appeal to everybody, and it's got to be easy to understand. It's like a website. You know, you ever go on a website, you're like, what? You read legal jargon, you're like, what the fuck is this?
Mm-hmm.
I think you got to just make it so it's buttons and letters and colors, you know, just easy peasy to figure out.
Simplify.
You want to walk into that store and get it.
So it's like maybe they don't understand the premise, so you need to be more clear on what it is you're even trying to say with the premise.
Of course. I mean, look at Chris Rock. He repeats his premise 3 times. You know, women can't go back in lifestyle. They can't go back in lifestyle. Women, that's just him making sure you get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know exactly what he's saying.
Nice. Simple is better.
Oh, you got to keep it simple. Nothing worse than being confusing as a comic.
All right. Justin Bournoville. What is your opinion of the live stream shows that are popping up online? Would you recommend starting one or waiting until this craziness is over?
Hey, you got to do what you got to do, Justy. You know, get out there, keep sane, have an outlet. It's all about having an outlet. You know, we used to get up on stage 2x a night, 3x a night. Now that's just completely wiped out. So You got to figure something out. So if you want to do it, do it. I don't know if there's much to gain from it, but at least you're yapping your gums and scheduling something. It gives you a little hope.
Have you done any of them?
One or two. I think they're dumb. I'd rather do this.
Yeah. That's what I've been asking every comic that has come on here is like, a lot of us right now are like, what do we do as comedians? You know, and a lot of people are saying, like Mike Cannon and Jacob Williams was on here today, and we're just creating a bunch of content, while Sean Patton was on here saying he's doing more of these live stream pop-up shows and stuff like that. What are you doing?
I'm doing this. I'm making videos. Mm-hmm. I'm tweeting like a madman. I'm writing like a madman. So for me, it's all about staying funny, and I don't feel like those live shows are funny, that funny, because it's all about the laugh. I need that response from an audience. So it's tough. But, you know, I'm not knocking them. Do what you got to do. But I like pods and I like the interaction. I don't feel like I'm getting a real reaction from those.
Nice. All right.
But, hey, do what you got to do.
Yeah, exactly. It's so early into this quarantine that it's still a lot of, like, trial and error, you know.
Right.
And Sean Patton had said he did one early on that was just, like, him and comics. And then he did it one like the day before our interview where it was like comics with an actual like audience of like 15 people on Zoom. Like it was
really,
so they're growing, getting a little more sophisticated, but
okay.
It's still, there may be a delay or something. It's still not as
well. If there's an audience, then that's different. I was thinking it was just you and a guy.
Mm-hmm. So
maybe I'll do it. Fuck it.
I'm sure eventually.
Yeah.
It's no Joe Rogan, but it'll
no, you might have talked me into it.
Well, this next one comes from Liam Harvey. It is,
mm-hmm.
What's your favorite kind of queef?
I like a long, flappy one, just like a... Those are the best, when it really gets the air out.
All right, and less importantly, where's a good place to learn joke writing techniques? Any books / anything I can read?
That's a good question. You can read the Comedy Bible, but it's not great. I think go online. There's a YouTube video online of Seinfeld writing a joke.
Yeah.
And the New York Times did it. That was pretty good. But again, it's like boxing. You got to get in the ring.
Right.
It's hard to learn. You got to try it and fail and tweak it and try it. Or you got to try it on regular people at your work or your family or friends. It's almost a two to tango kind of thing. You know, it's like saying, It's like saying, hey, you gotta, can I learn to be sexy? No, you gotta go try it and be sexy and fail. And, you know, you can't just joke writing. You need the response. So without knowing whether it's good or not, it's hard to get better. If that makes sense.
Yeah, there was there's a Greg Dean book that was like Step by Step to Stand Up. That's the only one I've ever read, but it was good at breaking down one-liners in terms of like
how to
find your premise, how to set it up, how to misdirect it. So it was good in the early years of just finding maybe the mechanism behind creating a joke, but you still have to say it on stage to know.
Yeah. Or to even a human being, something.
Right. But... yeah, exactly.
Good luck.
But listen to Hot Breath Podcast. It's a great one, Liam. That'll be...
Or just listen to Stephen Wright, Demetri Martin, Mitch Hedberg, and just see what they did and go, why did that go that way? Why, you know, try to figure it out.
All right. Quinn Fitzgerald says, oh, love the pod. All right. Thank you, Quinn. Oh, wait, he's talking... Wait, which one? Are you talking to Tuesday or Hot Breath? I don't know which one he's talking about.
Good question.
We'll say both. We're of the same ilk. And he also asks, how do you know when you should move to New York for comedy?
I don't know. It's like having a baby. There's no wrong or right time. I think just go. Just go. Get 10 minutes together that you like. Although I went with 10 minutes. I was like, this kills everywhere. I'm going to show up to New York. Everybody's going to blow me. Bomb for 2 years. So
yeah,
I would go sooner better than later.
Yeah, just kind of jump in. Not
just
right now.
In.
Wait for this pandemic. But otherwise, just jump in. Yeah, and Sean Patton actually had fun insight into just like move here, but just understand nothing's overnight, and that you're going to be doing these rough open mics, and it's going to be uphill. But if you want to do comedy, then it's just part of the process.
Yeah, you could be a great pole vaulter, but New York is the Olympics, so now you're coming to the Olympic camp, and you're going to have to step it up.
Yep. All right. Oh, Jason P. Leonard, he said, hey, comedy.
Ah, Lenny.
Yeah, he runs some great shows in Louisiana.
Great shows.
Thomas Metelsky, what inspires you when comedy kicks you in the teeth again and again?
Woo-wee. Well, the funny thing is the teeth kicking is what keeps you coming back because it hurts so bad that it motivates you to go, I got to do that again just to feel better. Mm. And then that one could kick you in the balls too. But it just, every now and then you get that one good one that you're like, all right, I'm good. But you're only as good as your last set, and it stings and it hurts, but what else can you do? I mean, if this is what you've chosen, this is it. You know, you got dumped before, you didn't give up women.
What have you found to like, in those low moments where like you did bomb or something didn't work out, what did you find was helpful in you overcoming that faster?
Whew. Well, you got to go back to the notebook and retool and go harder. And then because it's so scary, that feeling is so painful that it makes you motivate you to work harder and go back. And then you're like, all right, now when I go back on stage, I'll be ready.
Yeah, it's almost
a motivator.
The faster you get back on stage, the better you'll feel type deal.
Yes.
Just keep moving. Just keep fighting.
Exactly. Totally.
All right. Mr. Leonard, he followed up with a question. Do you think a lot of comics on any level won't come back once the virus is over? Ooh.
I sure hope so. we need a good douching of the comedy world. But yeah, for sure. I mean, there's so many, even in January, you see a huge influx because everybody's got their resolutions.
Mm-hmm.
And then by late February, they're gone because they realize, oh, this is no money in this. This is a lot of work. I'm losing my nights. So, this is going to push out a lot of comics, and I'm happy about it. Cause you know, there's not enough stage time for everybody. Let's be honest. And look, everybody can do it. Everybody should have the right to do comedy, but it's not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just jerking off and having a fun hobby, that's great. But some of us are buying food with this. So I don't know. Do what you want, but leave it to the passionate.
Yeah. How are you making money right now, by the way, also?
Well, this pays, I assume. No.
Yeah.
No, I my podcast is bringing in a lot of dough. I'm about to sell this special, hopefully, that I just about to drop. So that'll be a nice chunk of change.
Spoiler
and then Sound
alert.
Exchange. Oh yeah. Sound Exchange, every time they play my album on Sirius,
right.
That's a nice chunk. So I'm just living off of royalties, basically.
Mm-hmm. So what's the deal with the special? When did you what's going on with that?
Well, it took a little longer to edit because my editor had a snafu, and then we have a network involved, and then they pulled out, and then we got a new network. So there was all kinds of hiccups, but we're back, and it looks great, and I'm proud of it, and I'm happy with it. So it should come out soon, but I need a little time to promote now that it's all done. I thought it was going to come out yesterday, but everything fell apart. So now it's coming out in like 2-3 weeks, but just because I need some promotion time.
Oh, wow. Okay. Where'd you film it at?
Filmed at this theater in L.A. called the Dynasty Typewriter.
Okay.
We sold it out, and we were like, well, this is a pretty place. We might as well shoot here. And it was all last minute, and it all came together. And I'm thank Jesus, praise Allah, that I filmed it before this fucking happened.
Dude, wow. And is this one of those specials you, like, paid for yourself with hopes to sell it
all
that? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Totally. The Sam Morril model.
Yeah, it seems to be the move. Yeah, I want to get him on here to talk about how he did his whole thing and then released it actually through Comedy Central's YouTube and all that. It's very interesting angle.
Yeah, seems to be the new world order and these other companies. Like, he's one of the best comics. And
yeah.
Netflix is stupid for not putting him on, but they want shiny star fuckery, which I get. It's a business,
right.
But hey,
all right.
He's talented.
Coming up next, Trent Babb. For writing, when you write multiple punchlines for one joke, do you tend to go with the one with the most surprise or the one that flows the best?
Ooh. Now, you see, that's a tough one because you should go with the one that it's a compromise of the best laugh and that you feel good about. It's got to fit you. You got to have integrity and go with it because sometimes you get a hacky line that kills, but you go, A, that's probably been done a million times. B, that's easy. It's only getting laughed because I say fuck or jizz or whatever. So you got to find the nice integrity line between this kills and I like it. I approve of this.
Mm-hmm.
So then the one that with the flow is just going to happen. You can't just have a good punchline and change the flow because then the punchline will change. So I wouldn't worry about the flow or whatever. I would worry about how you feel about it. And if it's got to get a huge laugh, too.
Because it seems like if you feel better about the joke, you'll be able to deliver it more consistently.
Totally, totally. And the more confidence you have behind it, like, you know when you're about to deliver a punchline, you go, this is going to kill.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you want. It's almost like, you know, sometimes you shoot a basketball, and right when it leaves your finger, you go, that's going to swish. Even before it hits midair, you know it's going in. That's how a joke should feel when you tell it.
How long did you prepare for this new special? How long were you writing that one for?
I think I wrote the thing within 2 years,
uh-huh.
But I did another year of just polishing, and then another year, 6 months of adding tags. Because you got to almost fall out of love of a bit where you can see it clearly.
Yeah.
You know, like we've all heard a woman be like, my boyfriend's beautiful, and you look at him, he's a fat piece of garbage. But in her eyes, she loves him so much that he seems attractive. Sometimes you have that with jokes. You know, you're like, this joke, I love it so much. I'm so proud of it, but it's not that great of a joke. So you almost need to step back from your own material for a while just to see the realness of it. You know, how accurate it is or how funny it actually is.
And are you're disciplined with writing, but are you disciplined with like recording your set and reviewing your set as well and like that process?
Pretty good in the beginning, you know.
Yeah.
If a joke is new, I'll listen to it 100 times. But once it starts working, I just kind of put it over in the killing pile.
Cool.
And I don't really listen to it anymore. But you got to listen to the new.
All right. Charlie Harper, first comic you saw live.
Oh, me. Jeez. I thought he was about to say his. First comic I saw live. I saw this guy. Are we talking real comics or like open micers?
Probably a name-worthy comic.
Jeez. Maybe Seinfeld. I saw Seinfeld in 01 in Baton Rouge.
Whoa.
Dating a gal. She got me tickets for a birthday present. I still remember it. he ran out. He had the suit on. It was incredible. I still remember some of the bits. I saw George Carlin shortly after that at a casino in Mississippi. Not a great set, but something cool to see. I'm glad I saw him because he died shortly after. So, yeah, those are probably the two big ones that stand out.
Nice. All right. Zach Lyman, where was your first headliner gig?
Ooh. First headlining gig was at a place called the Howlin' Wolf in New Orleans. And it was like, wasn't even a real headlining gig. It was like six comics and I went last.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And those are benchmarks. You know, those are milestones though in our careers.
Sure. Sure. I was happy about it. I was excited. I was flattered. My name was on the flyer. You know, 12 people showed up. Right. It's a huge room that fits 500, but 12 people are there just, you know, and I bombed my ass off, but it was still a big moment. My brother showed up and nobody liked it, but it was something.
All right. Liam Harvey, how do you get away with riskier bits like your pedophile bit, grape juice, he said.
Oh, thanks. That bit took months and months. It took almost a year to get that bit to work.
Whoa.
Because it's so dark and, you know, such a touchy subject, no pun intended with the kid touching. But it's so tough that, like, you had to work that bit out, but you got to also factor in that they're terrified, you know, so it's tough to get those jokes to work. So you gotta almost have to tweak those to perfection in your apartment before you can actually get a laugh at it. The joke has to be pitch perfect before it'll work because the subject matter is so edgy.
How do you get it right in your apartment alone without an audience?
Because I still bombed with it. You got to just suck it up and bomb with it. Uh-huh. And just get little bits of information from the audience every time it bombs. Like, all right, it did a little better if I say it that way. If I say it faster, it does better. Or if I just lean into it, it got a little bit better. And then over time, just with those little clues, I could get it to work 100%. But it took a lot of trial and error of just guinea pigging that bit over and over. Let me try it a little this way. Let me try it that way. Let me try that. And it took forever, but I finally got it.
What makes you continue to pursue a joke like that instead of just saying, it's useless, I'll throw it away?
Everything in your body's like, throw it away. You're bombing. You're throwing your whole set off because this pedophile joke is freaking people out. Mm-hmm. But if you believe in it and you run it by comics, that's where comics come in handy, because comics just see through. They don't see the bullshit. They see, oh, this is a good bit. I like the idea here. They're not just listening to the, you know, oh, the buzzword. Mm. They actually hear the bit for what it is. So I think you got to use your friends on that one.
Gotcha. All right. We're we got about 6 minutes left, kids. So we're going to bump them in here. Mike Fountain, best ways to recognize, sharpen, and develop your persona/voice.
Ooh, man. I got to tell you, that's a good question. When I was coming up, I asked everybody that question. I'm open for Pete Holmes, and I asked him. I asked Tom Papa. I asked everybody when I was starting out, because I was like, what the hell is your voice? What is that? Why is everybody found theirs and not, I haven't found mine? And somebody told me, I forgot who, but somebody gave me the great advice, is look at all your jokes that work and find the common link between all those jokes, and that's probably your voice. Why do you keep going back to these? Why is this subject matter touched on a lot? Why is this like this? Why'd you pick that material? Whatever it is. And that helped me. And listening to yourself. And you go, oh, that's a joke I would tell. Or you listen to your friends and go, that's such a Mark joke. And you're like, really? And then you go, okay, so what the hell's Mark? What the hell's that? You know, and just, it's all about clues and remembering everything. Take it all in. So for me, I figured out eventually that my shtick is, it's basically saying, if this is like that, then why isn't this like that? And that's my whole act.
Yeah. Nice.
I don't see color. Well, then I'm black. No, you're not. Aha. You know, just find inconsistencies.
All right. Vic Cedeno. He said comedy.
Hey, Vic. Vic's Vapor Rub. Michael Vic.
How?
Victorious. Sorry.
No, you're good. I would play the game with you, but I want to make sure we get all these questions.
No, you're right.
Yeah, in a longer interview, I'll tag them up with you. How long after you write a joke do you try it on stage? And so you review notes before going on stage or edit after?
Whoa. Is this two questions?
So I think it's how long after you write a joke will you try it on stage? And then do you review notes before going on, or do you just edit after?
Ah, good question there, Vicky. I write, if I feel good about a joke that I've written, I'll do it that night. Sometimes I'll write it on the train on the way to a show and feel like, oh, this is a jackpot, guaranteed laugh. I'll try it. And it doesn't always work. Probably 9 out of 10 times it doesn't. But if I feel good about it, I'll try it. Sometimes I have an idea in the shower and I go, this is big, and you got to like take it apart. And sometimes that takes weeks before you bring it on the stage because it's such a complex idea that you got to simplify before you bring it out to the masses. And two, I will look at my notes till the millisecond before I grab the microphone. Mm-hmm. I'm walking to the stage looking at my notes. You got to look at your notes. I read something when I was a kid that if you study right before the test, you have like – if you like you read through your study material bullshit before your test, you'll do like 28% better. And it's the same with your jokes. If you look through it, especially new stuff, it helps.
Boom. All right.
Boom.
Sean Murphy. I've heard for years that you need to be able to perform clean comedy. I try hard to write clean, meaning I don't curse a lot, but my subject matter always ends up adult. What's your opinion on clean comedy?
Hate to say it, Shawnee Murph, dog, but it is very helpful, very almost necessary. I mean, even Dave Attell, who's like the funniest guy on the planet, who's got midget jokes and jizz, he's got clean. He can write clean. He can do it. So I think it's imperative if you want to do Fallon, you want to do all these late nights, you got to have it. So it's a good way to get in the door. I'm not saying it's you. I'm not saying it's your voice or your path forever. But I think it's good to have, and fuck it. Suck it up and try to make it work. Like, let's say you're an amazing wrestler and you want to do the MMA. You got to learn boxing. You got to box a little. So have it in your corner. You know, I'm not saying it's got to be your future career. What's the opposite of temporary?
Permanent?
Thank you. It's not your permanent world, but try it. Knock it out. And it's harder. It is harder. I will say as a comic, I can admit clean is harder. Dirty is easier. I'm not saying dirty's bad. I'm not saying dirty's hack. But it's easier because sex will get a laugh. Cursing will get a laugh. So challenge yourself by trying to write some clean.
Yeah, and if you didn't have clean, you wouldn't be able to open for Seinfeld.
Exactly, like exactly. And trust me, I had to sift through albums of stuff to find the cleanest shit that's like his level clean. And I'll tell you what, I'm glad I had it.
All right. Dos más, mis amigos. Charlie Harper, what do you feel is the biggest drawback that keeps the bigger distributors from buying specials?
Well, I'll tell you what Netflix told me.
Okay.
They said, we got a lot of honkies, a lot of straight whitey, but if you're selling out like 2,000 seats or more, we'll have you because that means they can guarantee views. So be a minority, get in a wheelchair, be fat, have something, or get famous and then go and become a stand-up. Or just get a following. If you get a following on your own, if you become some YouTube queef, that'll help. You know, go get a huge YouTube numbers and then send them your special. They'll buy it. They're just business people. They're suits.
Yeah.
They just want numbers. They want money. They want views. So if you don't want to do it the long way, that's your route. Go viral, then do comedy.
All right. Trent Babb. Seinfeld told you to move around more on stage. Do you bring that advice to all your gigs or just the larger ones?
Now I do it at all of them. Why the hell not? Because I wouldn't do it, but when he told me that, I was like, what the hell? This guy's old fashioned. He's, you know, he's out of touch. And I did it, and my set went from a B- to an A+. So he was right, and I'm glad I took his advice, and I'm glad I applied it. Because why the hell not? If it works in a theater, it'll work on a club. So
what did you change?
I'm not jumping around.
Like, what did you change that made everything?
I used to walk out, plant my feet on a theater stage, and just deliver my jokes standing there. And they went well, But you walk out and you walk all the way to one side, walk all the way to the other, do like a Chris Rock thing. Start saying the N-word, everything, and you will – that crowd can't take their eyes off of you, and they're mesmerized. And now they're so mesmerized that they're engaged more and listening more. So they're going to hear every joke, every word, every punch. So that equals more laughs.
Boom. All right, and the final question here. I'm going to squeeze in Skip because – I met him in Lafayette, Louisiana. I did one of Jason's shows last year, and he bought a Hot Breath shirt. So I want to let him close us out with the final question.
See, you buy merch, you get paid in the end.
So a Skip asks, how long will you keep a bit / work on it till you drop it, especially if you love the bit but it's not getting the response you want?
You got to drop them. Greg Giraldo said, you got to kill your babies. It's hard, but I've seen comics in New York doing the same bit, and it bombs every goddamn time, and they keep doing it, and it makes you look worse, and it also makes you look crazy. Like, you're going, what are you trying to get out of this bit? It never has worked once. Get rid of it. But I know it's hard. We're so attached, and we took the time to write it, so it's so hard to let it go. But if you truly believe in it, I would put it aside. As I said, fall out of love with it. Or become a better writer over time and then revisit it. And you can really look at it from a clear eye and go, that's what I was missing. That's it. I missed that one little angle, and that changed the whole bit. So if you really believe in it, put it in the drawer, come back in a year.
Boom. Mark Normand, everyone. Let's give him a round of applause. Thank you, Mark, for coming back on Hot Breath, man. I know we had an interview planned while you were in Atlanta, and then Corona brought us to Skype. So
I know. I'll be back. It's already rescheduled. I'll be back, I think, at the beginning of next year. I'll have some new material. The special will come out. Listen to the pod.
Yes.
It's like we never left.
Yeah, everyone, go support Mark, Tuesdays with Stories, the podcast. And when that special comes out, man, anything we can do here at Hot Breath to help you, man, please don't hesitate.
God love you. Yeah, share it. Spread the word. Go gay. Spread your cheeks. Anal, queef, semen. Praise Allah. Thanks, gang.
Mark Normand, thanks for being at the Hot Breathverse, my man.
Thank you.
Hey, what's the title of your special?
Out to Lunch.
Out to Lunch. Trent Babb at the buzzer. Mark Normand, have a good night. Stay safe out there, my man.
Jews.
Well, there you go, Hot Brethren and Sistren. Mark Normand. Back in the Hot Breathiverse, answering your questions. The exciting news we had, I teased in the intro, is that we have actually just launched our first online comedy writing course. So if you're looking to learn some new tips and techniques to help improve your writing, go into the show notes, join the class, and get some more info on how you can be a part of that and the private Facebook group where we're writing new jokes together every day. Hot Sisterin Tara Brown also actually wrote a review of Mark's comedy special on our website, hotbreathpodcast.com. If you're interested in becoming a Hot Breath correspondent and writing content like Tara did and getting it out in front of the Hot Breathiverse and comedy fans around the world, reach out to me on social media at Joel Byers Comedy or at Hot Breath Pod with your ideas, and let's collaborate. We have time right now. And the more we can come together and help each other, the better. That's what this whole Facebook group, that's what all these Q&As are about. So go join that Facebook group. Tell other comics about it. And we'll be back here with another episode, Hot Brethren and Sistren. So those of you that know, I end all these episodes thanking my wife. So thank you to my wife, Erin, for making the theme song to this podcast. And she made the theme song to my comedy special that is available in the show notes as well, or on my website, joelbyerscomedy.com. But now that's it. Until next Monday, right here on Hot Breath. Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.